probably one of the most poignant and powerful montages that I've seen in cinematic history was underscored by David Bowie in Space Oddity. I'm referring, of course, to Luc Besson's classic Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. Astonishingly, Richard Fitzwilliams, you have omitted to actually cover this movie, which has been such a disaster in terms of box office, but I think it actually will be a cult hero, much like Fifth Element. But there we are, Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets. Welcome, Richard Fitzwilliams.
Welcome indeed.
I notice you've ignored the Luc Besson line completely on that system, but I think you would. Certainly, I preferred it to Dunkirk. Let's move on.
Just before you move on to the most controversial statement you could possibly have made, you would agree that is probably a minority opinion.
Yes, okay. I'll grant you that. I have in my hand here something I never thought I'd be holding on a Thursday morning. It's a copy of the Daily Mail, or any morning. Still, 90 damning minutes that will haunt Charles and Camilla. This is actually from Monday's Daily Mail. Jan Moyer on, of course, Sunday's Diana documentary.
Yes, I saw that. I mean, I saw the documentary. I ought to mention...
Before you do, Richard, let's just set the scene, because there is a lovely connection with one of the Midweek Drivettes and, indeed, that very same documentary. It's not Ben Lewis, it's not John Wenham, but Ellie, the connection, of course, with... in fact, it's connecting all of us together with the Chancellor of the University of Lincoln.
Lord Victor Badawali, who is our most fine and excellent Chancellor and one of the best human beings on the planet, who does so much for charity and so much good work, and actually was very close to Princess Diana and knew her quite well. And anyone who watched the recent documentary about William and Harry and their remembrances of their mother will have seen him extensively on that, talking about Diana and all the amazing charity work that she did. So link to all of us.
And one day, of course, you said he might indeed do a Midweek Drive morning edition with us as well.
Well, he did do.
He did.
He did. Anyone who heard it will remember his interview with Reginald D. Hunter
And Angela Rippon.
And Brother Lord.
It was
Lord
wonderful.
It was wonderful.
He may well return.
I'm going to arrange for him to return. He will. He's coming for steampunk.
So we can maybe set it up
around that.
Outrageous. So there we are, Richard. We've just set our particular scene here.
Indeed, and set the scene very, very interestingly, because I thought the documentary with William and Harry talking so openly about Diana and what she achieved, and indeed this was the emphasis was, of course, to tell a generation who'd grown up in the 20 years since tragic death that there were so many areas where she'd made this extraordinary contribution. And, I mean, one thinks of the taboos at that time which surrounded HIV/AIDS, of the landmines, most tragically, of course, she didn't live to see the international treaty banning them, but also the bereaved, the homeless. And the way since April, both William and Harry have surprised many, including, I think, many royal observers, by opening out in the way they have about losing a mother when you're young, thinking back. And Harry admitting he'd gone for counselling and talking about how traumatic it was. And also, of course, everyone's heart went out to them at 15, 12, walking behind her coffin so unforgettably on the day of the funeral. And discussing things so openly, it's part of her legacy, because I that talking, for example, and this is what their charity with mental illness, with Heads Together, what they're trying to do is to make talking about problems, depression, grief, mental illness, breaking down these taboos and making it easier for people to talk to one another. And I think that has been absolutely wonderful. We have for years been threatened with these tapes, given their controversial history and the fact that recorded by Peter Settlin. I met him and he mentioned what had happened. It certainly appears, it's rather amazing that Diana actually opened herself up in this way, literally hardly knowing him. And, I mean, these are absolute dynamite. There are 12 of them, by the way, and 5 have somehow disappeared. I have a feeling one day they will turn up in some form. But in 2004, the NBC aired a program that putting it mildly, frankly, was, I thought, poisonously exploitative, which had a lot of material in these tapes, which was part of the build-up to the Channel 4 film. My own feeling was the tapes were recorded in private. The fact that Diana was unpredictable, the fact that her cooperation with the Morton book, her panorama appearance, that did not mean that she intended what were very, very clearly private moments. There are 50 hours involved in this to be shared with a large audience. And my feeling was that Channel 4's excuses for airing them, that they had the conventional interviewee format. Well, they didn't. It's perfectly obvious that Diana was, as you would see, she was quite giggly at times. She was nervous at other times. Settlin was a voice coach. No one at the time could possibly have thought these tapes could have made it publicly. It was very unwise of her to allow material of this sort to be filmed, that is fact. But what I believe that Channel 4 also said, the princes have spoken out, now it's time to have a historical record, that famous phrase, historical record that would be improved by showing this material. What in fact we saw was a purely cynical exercise linked to ratings, and their ratings absolutely soared. The reason for this was obvious. For days, what the papers had been doing was reproducing extracts from the NBC series, which went into the intimate lives of Charles and Diana, which I think is utterly tasteless and completely beyond the pale, which went into a lot of detail in a whole variety of areas that were controversial, material, something the Queen had said, or whether it was Diana's views on the royal family or whatever, and her bulimia. The idea that we were going to see something truly sensational undoubtedly drew 3.5 million people to watch it. But what I actually saw was, quite frankly, something mainly, it was talking heads. We had a former protection officer, Ken Wharf, private secretary Patrick Jeffson, and ballet teacher, and also there was a commentator who was pretty lugubrious, and they attempted to link it to contemporary events. We saw the Falklands, and we saw rather a lot of BSE. I couldn't make out why.
Well, the bone, vine, spongiform, encephalomyelitis, as Jan Moyer actually says, what you have there is an attempt to relate to the viewer the notion of, here we are, mad cow disease. Is this another mad royal cow? It's an interesting line. It's a subtle thing. I wouldn't advise my own student, but that's the way that semiotics work in the teleliteracy world.
That is the way that someone's mind must have worked, and quite silly. But I have to say that if you have manipulative tapes like this, and I made this point on BBC Scotland, where we had a debate, we had about 25 minutes to discuss this, and I was saying that if you have tapes, what you should not do, if you want them to be taken seriously, the documentary. We saw the 1994 Confession of Adultery by Charles for Jonathan Dimbleby, who's done nothing, in my view, but give him bad advice. What they did was show what Charles was saying on screen, cutting back to tapes with Diana on them, as though she were watching. It's completely manipulative. I mean, it was...
Listen, you're up against Poldark on BBC One. You've got to do something to actually ramp up the whole thing.
Yes, well, I mean, that you've just summed it up. Quite honestly, I mean, I don't believe the tape should be shown, but what we got was not something that in any way will tarnish Diana's memory, because NBC, what they put out was, I mean, that would have been absolutely unthinkable in the month we commemorate 20 years since her death. What was actually put out was more a tease with odd little bits. There was a mention of sex life. There was a mention of Prince Philip. There were one or two cut out. I mentioned all these tapes. They were heavily edited, obviously. And it was all partly, anyway, a gigantic tease, partly an obsessional search for ratings for tapes that, frankly, I still believe should have been private, but we may well see the other five rear their heads at some future point. But
there are several series of Poldark still to go, so clearly that's going to be the case. Richard, one moment. Ellie, you've got a point.
Yeah, well, all it was is this not part of the the debate that we have with students all the time about, does news really exist anymore? Is everything that we see on television purely a story, purely designed to create the outrage that you're expressing, Richard? And we're constantly manipulated through these capillaries of information that are specifically engendered to make us behave and act in a certain way. And the whole concept of news, you know, the whole concept of the Ruthian ethos of television to educate, to inform, to entertain.
Much like Siren, really.
Yeah, well, yes, very much. You know, we are here purely to elicit a specific response. But, no, this is one of those theoretical debates, in essence.
John Wenham, crossing the generations, what are your views? Would you, if you were commissioning editor, Channel 4, said, rubbing your hands with glee, say, fantastic, let's dish the teasing dirt, let's give Jan Moyer something to write about in the Daily Mail?
I'm not one of those people. I'm one of these people that like to have an unbiased view from whichever corporation is bringing out the news. No swaying one way or the other. Take it directly down the centre, arguments for, arguments against, and let the listener decide.
Or the viewer in this instance. Ben?
I completely agree with John. I shan't name any corporations, but I think it reflects highly not just elections, but daily news. You can see who's left-leaning and who's right-leaning. It's the same with newspapers as well. No, there's no one straight down the middle. And, you know, I know some corporations like to take both angles through their presenters, but I just don't think in this society that a lot of people do their research on other corporations or look at news from different angles. They only tend to look at it from one perspective, which is why they end up developing one opinion rather than doing their full research. But I just want to ask Richard quickly. So, Richard, do you think this documentary, then, do you think it's bringing up almost like old sort of things that have been buried and rather than, you know, stuff that should have been perhaps left?
Is there any need for it?
Should it have been left?
Well, my feeling is, I mean, it's not a question of burying anything. Diana is no one's personal property. She's an icon and a worldwide icon. Anything to do with Diana, and I mean, talk about the Daily Mail. Well, as a royal commentator, I have to have it, and every day they've been running something on Diana, and indeed, I don't know how the Daily Express survived after the inquest into her death was closed.
Because they had immigrants and migrants to talk about.
Well, we're still talking about it now, aren't we? And in a way, this is the thing that there's so much going on in the world today. There are so many things that we could be talking about, the news, the issues, the real problems that face so many different people across this country and around the world. And instead, here we are talking about Diana again.
And incidentally, we will be talking about Diana yet again in 5 years' time when 25.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, probably 5 days.
There is no end to it because, I mean, she was absolutely fascinating and certainly from the point of view of celebrity, you call it soap opera if you will, she certainly wouldn't have been able to do what she did if she wasn't royal. And, of course, the links with the royal family and the disastrous marriage, the wedding that other with the fairy tale. You could go on and on, and they will go on and on. I don't see it ever ending. Of course, there will be highs and troughs in the way the press reported. But, I mean, even I happen to spot the Daily Mirror was talking about, I think it was the father of the supposed owner of the Mercedes involved in the fatal accident.
Obviously trying to dig at every particular sort of aspect
to find out. There is nothing left. Yet there always is, and for some reason, of course, it's the headline that draws people in, and of course, it's had tremendous glamour, and the fact that, I mean, for the camera, I mean, it was unbelievable how beautiful she was and how she was able to project that glamour.
And as Kenneth Turan said in the Los Angeles Times, for everyone who's yearned for movies of passion, taste and sensitivity that honestly touch every emotion, this is the one you've been waiting for. Yes, it's the re-release of Howard's End. See what we did there.
It's extraordinary, and I have to say that I have, oh yes, going to the Curzon Mayfair and sitting down and knowing I was going to have a film that I'd seen several times before, but one that was absolutely fascinating, set in Edwardian England, and the Slagles, Anglo-German bourgeoisie. The Wilcoxes are conservative and wealthy, and the film opens with an embarrassing engagement which gets nowhere between Helen Slagle, played by Helena Bonham Carter, and Paul Wilcox. But when the Wilcoxes subsequently take a flat opposite the Slagles, Margaret, played by Emma Thompson, oh, she's gorgeous in this role, befriends Mrs. Wilcox, played by Vanessa Redgrave, who wants to take her to Howard's End. And it's this, the property exercises an almost, it's an extraordinary effect on the story, because Slagle's lease is due to expire, and Ruth bequeaths Howard End to Margaret, but not in a piece of paper that is not legally binding, and which the Wilcoxes decide to ignore. And the consequences, when Henry, played by Anthony Hopkins, falls for Margaret and offers to find her a new house but ends up marrying her, and subsequently the way the Slagles befriend Leonard Bass, played by Samuel Wester, humble clerk, they like him, and they pass along fateful advice from Henry that the insurance company he works for is going to go bust, he must leave, which he does, loses his job, and he and is desperately poor. It's also living with someone who has another interesting part to add to this morality tale. It's summed up Henry Wilcox, a brilliant performance by Anthony Hopkins. Of course, one could say that he and Emma Thompson couldn't surpass themselves, and look at The Remains of the Day, I don't know which is better. But there is a line in the film which I quote, "You must not be sentimental about the poor," says the wealthy Wilcox. It is sad.
As E.M. Forster said, Richard, the past is a different country. They do things differently there. It's another country, effectively. As I said last week, I wasn't blown away by the fact, oh, yes, a 1992 movie, well acknowledged as a Merchant Ivory classic. But then if you're not into Merchant Ivory, you might sort of think, I don't know. Ben, would you go and see this movie, which was made before you were born?
I just quickly interposed lavish backgrounds, the perfect casting.
We know where you stand on this, Richard. It's
also,
two thumbs up.
Divide and the social aspect of the movie. Sorry, I wouldn't be biased.
Of course not, yes. So, Ben, would you be going to check out Howard's End?
I think, personally, I'd give it a watch, but I wouldn't go out of my way to
there
watch it.
There are so many double entendres that you can actually use with those particular names that they'll be overused.
It looks like a decent film, well made, but...
I have to admit, though, if it doesn't tick your particular box, Merchant Ivory...
It's not Valyrian and the City of a Thousand Planets.
It looks like a nice film, but would I go out my way to watch it? Probably not.
Oh, dear, the word nice is one of the most damning in the English language.
Oh, I'm sorry, Richard, I'm sorry.
Alex, you found that brilliant.
John, any thoughts of yourself? Have you seen the movie, of course?
I haven't seen the movie, no. To tell you the truth, I hadn't heard of the movie before
John
I walked
Wenham.
Into this studio.
What cultural desert did you used to have in South Africa? I mean,
goodness
sakes.
I have to say that it was nominated for 9 Academy Awards.
He's too busy doing the regular weekly What's On guide for the Lincoln Siren FM listener. Ellie, you must remember Howard's End.
I do. My husband would love it. Mm-hmm. For me, it would be significantly improved by zombies and aliens.
You see, Prejudice and Zombies, much better.
Oh, I love that. It's so good. I think Howard's End with zombies and aliens would be much better.
The revenge about me trying to get out of seeing Valerian and those planets.
You see, just bring them together. Yeah,
precisely.
A bit of Luke Bessel.
Happiness resolves.
I had a lot
of zombies in Howard's End, and I just don't think they were there, even among the bluebells.
This is true. Dancing zombies amidst
the bluebells.
Yeah, I would have thought if they're going to revamp the whole thing, you know, add some zombies via CGI, they can do it these days.
I think it's bad enough that they...
blasphemy and heresy on this.
Okay, well, let's do heresy and blasphemy next week.
Exactly.
It's a fantastic
double act. We might also next week touch on the Edinburgh Festival, because...
Well, I was just going to say, Edinburgh Festival there, we've been speaking with William Coles, of course, who is our regular Edinburgh correspondent. I know you didn't manage to get together this year or last year. Well, I'm sure we'll get you sorted out from that point of view. We're having to step aside from the wall, Richard. Is that okay with your good self, or do you want to give a brief mention to the wall?
Well, shall we just briefly say, because I don't think the wall needs more than a brief mention,
no.
Because it doesn't it doesn't fulfill the potential that it could have. It was directed by Doug Lehman of Bourne fame, and some of those movies are marvellous. I mean, the action sequences.
Bourne Identity, Bourne Legacy, Jason Bourne.
And this is, it's rather
Born
like
again.
Post-war Iraq. It reminded me of Colin Farrell in Phone Booth. You will recall, trapped in a phone booth, and you know that there's a sinister figure who could shoot him dead at any minute, and you don't know who that is, and then you start learning a great deal more about him throughout the movie. I have to say, Farrell deserved to be locked into Phone Booth, because I saw Alexander, which was one of the most terrible epics I'd ever seen, so I had no sympathy for him.
You wouldn't accept that. Colin Farrell is a genius. That is not acceptable.
Right,
Richard.
I have to say, just to be quick here, two American soldiers trapped by an Iraqi sniper are sent to investigate a construction site. One is out in the open, Shane Matthews, played by John Cena, and the sniper is talking or able to get on the radio, pretending to be American, to Sergeant Alan Isaac, played by Aaron Taylor-Johnson. I mean, Matthews is badly wounded, Isaac hit in the leg, water bottle punctured, hides for shelter behind the wall, and then he conducts this dialogue with a sniper. He doesn't know where the sniper is, and the sniper learns about him, and the sniper was once a school teacher, and the wall was once a school, and obviously this is the metaphor for the interference in Iraq and the Iraqi war, which was such a disaster. And as Isaac tries to get help, so the sniper Juba cuts into the radio broadcasts, and you feel that he completely controls things. What happens and how this develops? I mean, the problem with the movie is that you have so many close-ups of Aaron Taylor-Johnson. If you want that for an hour, then you will find there's a lot of drama at the end of it. But to take an obvious metaphor and conduct it in this way, the film does drag. I mean, you feel that you wanted to see a bit more, to learn a bit more about the two sergeants, but also perhaps learn or see the sniper. The whole tension of the movie is the fact the sniper is a voice, and you have very, very fine visuals where Isaac is trying to find out where he is. It's just that as a technique to draw in the audience, this is a bit overlong, and although it climactically is dramatic, I would have liked Jason Bourne to have appeared and
sorted it out.
Sorted it out.
In fact, the Diana tapes with Jason Bourne, now there's a movie I'd pay to go and see.
Or that family from Howard's End could have turned up.
Ben.
I do feel Howard's End's had a reception that I shan't forget this.
Let it lie, Rich. Let it go. Ben, would you be going to check out The Wall? Nothing to do with Pink Floyd or indeed the Chinese Wall.
Or Donald Trump.
Or Donald Trump.
I'd give it a try. It looks like a good film, but the fact that one of the main characters is a wrestler, I think they could have done a bit better in that perspective.
It's done by Amazon Studios. They're still budgeting things on Jeff Bezos' line.
I think it does look like an all right film. It's a type of genre I'd go and see, but whether it's an actual, something I'd go my way to see again, okay. I don't know if I would.
It is a very unusual narrative structure, but it's the period the film, the film takes with endless close-ups when you've got someone behind a wall which is gradually being shut away, by the way.
Hey, you've seen the Siren Office. Sorry, it's my old office. It's a line there. It could be a whole action back. John knows what we're speaking about. The rest of you, just imagine it through the mind. John, would you go and see The Wall?
I think I would. Mm. Yes, it's the sort of film I'd like to see.
Mm. Okay.
A disembodied voice can control, can be very sinister. I mean, I did quite enjoy it because climactically it really does pack a punch. I just had a problem with a whole movie being devoted to more or less the whole movie.
Close-ups of Aaron Taylor-Johnson, you've already mentioned.
Well, does his stuff very well. After all, you've got a sniper who appears to be controlling you.
Mm.
But, of course, the whole thing is a metaphor for a war that should never have...
Exactly. Ellie, The Wall.
Well, I feel that a lot of movies that come out at the moment are getting very, very samey. We're seeing the same films over and over and over again. And I can't help but think about Jack Howard our media production student who's gone on to achieve so many things on Radio 1, his own YouTube channel, and he was much lauded by John Kilnick, who was the producer of The Hunger Games, because Jack did a YouTube video which basically predicted the end of film and said that films are a medium that just aren't going to exist anymore and we need to be clever in terms of...
Richard, breathe.
You know, the rise of YouTube, and of course today Facebook announced their new platform for interacting with movies and film and content. And I just feel that, you know, Jurassic Park saved the film industry, if you go back in time.
To the 1990s.
To the 1990s, because at that point, the film industry was on its uppers, and it was looking at the end, and Jurassic Park reinvigorated cinema going, and we seem to have reached that point again, where...
Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets hasn't succeeded.
Well, it is that, but mind you, I would say that... I mean, there's always been a question about the British film industry and its ups and downs and so forth, but the film industry does face a very, very serious threat, and as you know, this is being fought out both in America, France, elsewhere. France, you have the streaming of a movie. 3 years you've got to wait after that movie has been shown in the cinema. In America, Netflix and Amazon...
It's almost a matter of weeks these days. Richard, before we actually go into a debate about the film industry, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Oh, yes, indeed, Alex. You've been on such good form. You've excelled.
It's going to be
being provocative.
It's going to be Ben's last studio show for a few months, so
yes. You know,
we sort of had to set him off with a good line as he goes off to work for Bentley for a year. But he'll still be connected telephonically, and who knows? We'll work through a whole range of other
things. So I'll catch up with you in 9 months or so, probably. Yeah.
Richard, will you be back with us again next week?
Absolutely look forward to it.
Drum roll.
from the interesting news of a future guests department. In a few weeks' time, we'll be having George's sister, Louise Harrison, will be joining us on the programme. So that's good news, isn't it, really? George, obviously, difficult to reach him from Heaven FM, but still, life continues. Got my mind set on you. Got our mind set on you, Ian Lennox. How
Hello.
Are you?
Oh, well, I'm okay.
That's all right. That's all we can ask for, you know.
During a rather ordinary summer up here, but never mind.
Well, when you say ordinary summer, surely just the very fact that we're alive on this great planet, the third rock from the sun, means that it should be enjoyed and talked about with general wonderment and so on. Because let's face it, we don't know how many summers we've got left.
Alex, we quite haven't managed that yet, you know.
I think you've got many summers left.
You think you're simple enough, but it isn't.
You never know, Ellie. You know, treat each day as it's a positive line. That's what Ben has taught me in his infinite wisdom, really. You know, so
right.
The guru
is
there.
Very wise.
Ian, it's going to be Ben's last programme before Manchester City thrash Brighton over the weekend.
Oh, I see.
It's not that he's... Because he's heading off to Crewe. He's heading off to Crewe in the Lancashire area to actually do a year's sandwich placement.
Yes. Oh, I wish him all the best.
Thank you.
So this is your last chance to sort of share Brighton and Newcastle United.
Well, we've always agreed, basically, on most things, haven't we, about football?
We have. We've never argued.
And I certainly hope that Brighton stay up.
And I hope Newcastle stay up too.
Well,
isn't that nice?
Exactly.
You thought you were going to get an argument out of us, you see.
I mean, you know, if I'm not here, who's going to give Alex stick?
I'm sure Shirley McKenzie will try, and who knows what will happen on that basis. But I'm surprised Chris Hughton didn't put in a bid for Neymar. I mean, a mere $200 million.
Well, funny you say that. I was interviewed by a Brazilian journalist in London the other day. And
As you do.
I know. And, you know, they're asking me about my opinion on the £200 million transfer, which I gave quite fairly. And then he asked, which team do you support? I said, Brighton. He said, who? And then I said, Brighton. And he said... So would you expect Neymar to come and play for Brighton? I said, well, if they had the money, maybe, but otherwise, no, not at all.
Brighton, Barcelona, it's all the same to a Brazilian. You know,
it's different, clearly.
Focus on them. Ian, as a writer, and currently on your latest opus, which is going to be another classic, you'd be pleased to know that, yes, Ellie Sample is back with us in the studio. Ellie, of course, who, like yourself, has been publishing all manner of wonderful things, etc.
Oh, really?
Yes, exactly.
Nowhere near as successfully as you, though, Ian.
Oh, don't be silly. So, you've got a pen to paper, you're not as successful as I am.
So what, pray tell, Ellie, is the latest opus that people can actually take from the Ellie Sample oeuvre?
Well, there's two things I can tell you, actually. One is that the Lincolnshire Puppy that I think I spoke about last time, which is a classic, a story of a lonely puppy that lived in Lincolnshire and that's befriended by lots of animals. That actually won a Heist Award, so we were really pleased about that. That was a couple of weeks ago. But last week I published Bastion, which is a book about a dystopian future, so sort of suitably depressing, I'm afraid.
You're in the crush.
I know, that's the trouble, isn't it? There's too many dystopian futures out there now, Ian.
That seems the only future.
Yeah, but it's done quite well. It's done quite well in the rankings, so I was quite pleased. But yeah, how are you doing though, Ian?
I'm plodding along at my own little pace. I'm averaging about 500 words a day on a new book, and I've got to about 72,000 words done now.
See, if you are following our Lincolnshire show coverage, you will see that Midrick Drivet and indeed Farmer's Daughter and a person who was actually on the wonderful Couples Come Dine With Me, Sue Royce, is a keen reader of the Lincolnshire Puppy. We did actually sort of tag into the whole thing.
Oh, really?
Actually reading the sex itself. So,
as you were giving a synopsis of that, actually, I immediately thought, well, there'll be pictures in that, there'll be drawings in that. Is that right?
There are some beautiful drawings. They've been done by Ruddock's Design, an amazing designer called James at Ruddock's. And the success of the book really falls to him because it is absolutely beautiful.
I was going to get your entire events team actually holding up the Lincolnshire Puppy. I thought that might be accused of bias there, so I just go with Sue.
Are the drawings almost like cartoon dogs? Are they very realistic?
Yeah, it's a cartoon Labrador.
It looks almost, you know, like Clifford the Big Red
Dog.
Big eyes,
things, yes.
It's almost reminiscent of that, with the way the dog looks, the sort of the illustration. But it's fantastic illustration.
John, would you be purchasing the Lincolnshire puppy for friends, family, and obviously it's the ideal Christmas time?
I was wondering whether or not my grandchildren would like that.
They'd love it. I think. How old are your grandchildren?
14 and 12.
Oh, ideal for them. I mean, I think, you know,
it's probably too right. It's been sent out to schools across Lincolnshire, so you're more than welcome to have a copy, and it's been provided for free. But a couple of schools have engaged, and they've started writing their own animal stories. And
what a good idea!
And also, one school has named the Lincolnshire puppy, and they've named him Impy after the Lincoln Imp, because he's naughty like the Lincoln Imp, and he is a very naughty puppy. But yes, I got about 50 stories through the post this week from children across Lincoln.
Wow!
Yeah, which are fabulous. So, and they are so imaginative, as you can imagine.
Yes,
they are just the best stories ever. They really, really are quite funny. And
I don't think people ever realise how difficult it is to write children's stories. Actually, part of this, the art of it, is to find the age group and the market, and then how to treat it. It's a great skill. I think I've got a friend of mine who's a school teacher, and his niece, I think, lives in Lincoln, and she's been highly successful in writing children's books. I think she sells somewhere in Scandinavia on a pretty big scale, you know.
Oh, wow. We'll do our research and find out who that sister might actually have been for too long. Meanwhile, Ian, have you got any words of advice or wisdom, given that you spent a good proportion of your journalistic career working for the Manchester Guardian, when, of course, it was based in Manchester, for Ben as he goes over to Lancashire?
I didn't work for the Guardian. I worked in the same building as the Guardian. I worked for the Daily Mail for about 6 years.
Well, there we are.
Then I was the darn market man.
Oh, the higher readership, though, wasn't it? About five times.
I was occasionally bought a drink by intellectuals in the press club, of course, who worked for the Guardian.
How wonderfully nice those Guardian readers have been when they wanted to condescend to the Daily Mail journalists and say, "Oh, it's all right, we'll buy you a drink." Exactly. Well done, as they pat you on the head. Like a little, Anyway, have you got any advice for Ben about life in Lancashire?
In Lancashire?
Yeah.
Don't say you're from Yorkshire.
As opposed to anywhere else, not really. Just, I think if you go into a strange place, I think if you treat people with respect, they respect you back. And, I'm sure Ben knows all that already.
I don't know, really.
I've learned that coming from Brighton up to Lincoln by myself on a lone journey.
Exactly.
All I can say is if Brighton beat Manchester City 1-0, don't go banging a drum in Albert Square.
Right? No. And that's not Albert Square, East End is Albert Square.
Imagine how Alex would react to the if Man United Man City win 1-0 and do the opposite.
It's a fantasy world you live in sometimes, and we do appreciate it. That's the important thing. John, any questions you want to put to Ian about cricket or various other factors, or comments about cricket now that England are apparently doing not too badly once again?
Well, they've gone up to number three in the world rankings, which is rather good. Yes, actually, it was a very opportunist test match, the last test match.
It's very strange. The whole series is strange, I thought.
Well, it has been strange, but...
One of extremes, isn't it?
This last one, where the wicket seemed to play funny tricks after 24 hours of play, it was turning like a right angle.
Yes. I only watched bits of it. I'm afraid, I must confess, I'm so angry with the way that the cricket authorities treated Durham a year ago that
What did the cricket authorities do to Durham that's made you
so
angry?
Well, Durham got in financial difficulties, and they didn't have a financial backer who was rich enough to bail them out. Mm-hmm. So the cricket authorities loaned them, I don't know what it was, they gave them or loaned them the money to keep them solvent. And they then promptly relegated them. They made them start on minus 45 points. Mm-hmm. And in the T20, they also penalised them on that.
Yes, but
and I had a cheek to say that they'd taken Durham's contribution to the England team into account. Hmm. I mean, Durham had propped up the England team for the last 10 years. They've provided the best all-rounders, the three or four of the best fast bowlers that they've had.
Yes, but Ian, there's one critical thing here. The cricketing authorities are in the south. Durham is in the north.
Yeah, well...
End off.
Actually, one of the main powerful people is from Yorkshire.
Well, there we are.
And you know, don't haven't really done much much different from they made a dreadful error in overbidding for one of the test matches. And Durham's big problem is that they play at Chesley Street, which is a small-ish town, and it's not in the city, in other words. So if you play a test match, there's not all that, but it's a little bit difficult to get there.
Right of reply, John.
Yes, I look at Durham as a very new county cricket county.
Well,
because, let's face it, only, 10, 12 years ago, they were in the minor counties.
No, 25 years ago.
Oh, 25 years ago. Time flies when you enjoy
yourself. Yeah, and they won the title. They won the first division title, I think, four times, or three times.
You've also got to realise that they are relying on the likes of Paul Collingwood to help coach the England fielding and a few other players from Durham that have been represented in the Lincoln in the National League, in the national sides, so that all round Durham has done very well for England.
It has. It's done more for England. England's done for it. That's for sure.
That's true.
Well, apart from Lincolnshire, of course. Speaking of various sporting activities, I see, Ellie, that the Lincoln Imp scheme is up and running once again. Anything to share about, obviously, the other? I mean, our if you're a Manchester City fan, clearly Lincoln City is always going to be your second side. But, you know, from that point of view, and I'm sure for Newcastle and Brighton fans as well, we all love Lincoln City, people can actually access all sorts of things with respect to seeing the Imps at play.
Yes, definitely. Lots going on with the Lincoln Imps, and the university has supported them and is a sponsor of the Lincoln Imps and is doing all sorts of things with them, which is great. We're very keen to see the Lincoln Imps doing exceedingly well this year. Fingers crossed. Exactly. And up the Imps and go Imps.
Are the Lincoln Imps the football team? Is that there?
Yeah, yes.
That's a really good question.
Sorry.
The Cowley brothers, etc. Tickets for Saturday, the 12th of August, Lincoln City versus Morecambe, are on sale from the Student Union reception from 3 p.m. today. Tickets £4 each, sold on a first come, first serve basis. £4. You can't reserve them by tickets by phone or email, but again, you can support Lincoln City. You can purchase as an individual maximum 4 tickets. For a match to allow for inviting friends and family.
I think that's only staff and students, by the way, Alex.
I'm just putting it out to the staff and students of the university, but it's still a heck of a deal. I mean, if ever there's a chance to actually sort of work through that.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of good things going on for the general public, though, at the moment, which I should probably mention briefly. We've got the Great Live series of talks kicking off with the Science of Superheroes, and that's the acclaimed US physicist Professor James Kakalios. Which I've probably said wrong, so apologies.
Yes.
Tell me, Ian, how should I have said
it? I don't know.
James Kakalios is a wonderful soul. The Physics of Superheroes on the 7th of September. It's a must attempt. I mean, we're looking at the virtual night galloping into Lincoln. Let's save it, Ellie, until the next part of the programme as we sort of ease shamelessly into that, where we'll be going to Austria.
There are some really exciting things coming up.
Exactly. We'll be going to Austria as well as finding out some more exciting things happening at the University of Lincoln in the city of Lincoln from Lincoln's first community radio station. There's even going to be a mystery voice for Ben as well. Ben, would you like to put those last two questions to Ian Lennox, please?
Ian, have you enjoyed your telephonic linguist today on the show?
I have indeed, yes.
And will you be joining us again next week?
Yes, I will, and I just wish you a very successful time in.
Thank you, Ian. Really appreciate that.
And if you meet any,
I hope you come back to Lincoln.
Oh, well, don't you worry.
If you meet any Daily Mail or Guardian journalists, you can say, I know Ian Lennox.
Oh, no, it's 30 or 40 years since I've
been. Yeah, they don't forget, Ian. They don't forget.
They're doing the die.
Times before, when we were young, we could smile and love, baby, man. If only these daylights could rewind time.
This is Siren FM.
Excellent. And now, as we approach the final segment of Midweek Drive Morning Edition's special summer outline, it's time for the weather from Lisa Maria Schwarzenauer in Austria. Guten Morgen, Lisa Maria.
Guten Morgen. So today in Lincoln, we expect a high of 19 degrees and lows of 12 degrees. And it's going to be a dry day with some good sunny spells.
Splendid. You see, that's exactly from Gibraltar in the first hour to Austria and Innsbruck in the second hour. It just shows, Ellie, the internationalisation that continues. And from a national student survey perspective of NSS results, it shows that we can also celebrate good news as far as that's concerned.
Excellent news, actually. We've done really well, again, in the national student survey. University of Lincoln's ranked in the top 20 in the UK on three question categories. So that's academic support, which of course is vital, learning resources and learning community. And a number of our courses were rated number one nationally for their subject area. And that includes biochemistry, social sciences, sociology. And it reinforces those things that impressed the TEF panel, who you'll remember.
Teaching Excellence Framework, gold standard.
Gold standard.
There are lots of universities have got nowhere near that. In fact, over 70% really haven't reached that gold standard.
You are spot on. So we're absolutely delighted. It's a really good accolade for the University of Lincoln, and it recognises all the excellent work of the academics like yourself and John and our excellent students like Ben and everything that's going on here at the university. So we're delighted.
And would you echo that, Ben?
Well, I would indeed. And in fact, I know Mr. Douglas Brown, my lecturer, has recently been celebrating the fact that the PR course came number one in two different topics and number two and number three in a variety of different areas.
Pleased you mentioned that. As programme leader for PR, obviously I'm not going to take that. It was marvellous to see that we were...
I was wondering if you were going to mention it, but I thought I will.
Alex. I mean, that's a real achievement out of nearly 200 universities in the UK. That is an amazing achievement.
Well, we continue. And Lisa Maria, as a postgraduate student, who I mean, Ben was beside himself when he realised you weren't going to be here last week for the whole sort of experience. I mean, he came back specially to sort of do the RAF Scampton thing. And he says, where's Lisa Maria Schwarzenau? And I had to say, she's gone back to Austria.
Sorry, Ben.
I was heartbroken.
So how is it? I mean, is there a case? I mean, you're still obviously completing your postgraduate MA journalism and you're doing your sort of final portfolio, etc. But how's life in Innsbruck these days?
It's quite nice, quite quiet. So I'm just trying to catch up with my friends, and it's not been that busy in the last week. So I'm trying to come back and settle in and.
It's a bit like getting reacclimatized after the hustle and bustle and sheer excitement of the metropolitan complex that is Lincoln. clearly, to actually head over to Innsbruck, it's a different line entirely from that perspective. But what were your highlights and what were your moments over the year that you spent with us as a postgraduate student reading the MA in journalism? What were your particular moments which you thought, yes, that was worthwhile?
I actually really loved learning all the different aspects of journalism, like broadcast, radio, and also writing, because I had no experience in either radio or broadcast for TV. So that was really exciting to just get an introduction in that and really be allowed to use all the equipment and get familiar with it. So it was really amazing that we could do these hands-on things. And I feel, well, I'm not an expert in all these things, but now I feel that if somebody told me to do it, I would know what I have to do. So I think that's definitely one of my highlights. I feel really well prepared.
And Ellie's been providing lots of examples and thoughts about ways to cope with exam results, A-level results, and so on. Just talk us through your own time in doing your well, it wasn't the A-levels, but the Austrian equivalent to things like that. How did you actually sort of go off to university? Just share with us the Lisa Maria Schwarzenauer story, academically
so
speaking.
The A-level story.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. So in Austria, it's called Matura. So basically, it's similar to that. So we've got five or six exams, depending on which kind of exam mode that we choose. And then we've got oral exams and we've got written exams. And for the written exams, we get the results back 2 or 3 weeks after the exams. So everybody's really, really nervous because if you fail those, you'll have to retake everything. And then we've got the oral exams and we find out our grades, fortunately, on the same day. So basically, on the last days of exams, we know if we can go on to university or not, which is quite good, so we don't have to wait for 2 months or longer in awaiting anxiously.
Clearly, in Britain, we prefer that deferred gratification, really, and sort of let the tension mount into the whole thing. But it is interesting. Ellie, thoughts on the results game? And which university did you go to for your undergraduate, Lisa?
I went to the University of Innsbruck, so it's very close to home and was kind of the obvious choice. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, so I thought if I would just try out something, I at least want to be in a place where I know people and where I know I will feel comfortable. Hmm. And it turned out to be the right decision, actually, so I really enjoyed it.
Well, Innsbruck is a fantastic university. Hmm. I mean, absolutely really good. And I think, I guess, the good thing about that sort of being able to go through the process immediately with your results makes finding a place at university hopefully slightly less concerning and worrying than it can be here in the UK, where clearing means that an awful lot has to happen on one day. Did you find that?
Yeah. Not at all. So in Austria, the whole thing is basically anybody who passes, no matter which grade they have, can go on to study. Mm-hmm. So there's not that much of pressure that you have to apply for universities and hope that you can get in.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, there's no real restrictions. There's a few subjects like medicine or pharmacy where you have to take an entry exam.
Mm-hmm.
But for most other subjects, whether that is English, whether that is, I don't know, history, whatever, you can just apply and then you are allowed to study. It doesn't matter how many people there are.
Which is,
in a way, good, but also mm-hmm. bad, because sometimes there are just so many students and they can't really cope with the amount of students there. But at least you don't have to worry that you won't get in.
And that does sound a very different experience, because here in the UK, I know that students will be starting to worry already about those exam results coming through on the 17th. And I will say that our telephone number, 0808 164 4444. So anyone who wants to talk to us about clearing or about adjustment can get in touch. And the thing I'd say is, on the day where there are lots of people trying to get through once they get the results, is please be patient. And if you do want to ring in advance, as Alex said, then please feel free to do that. And when you do ring, make sure you have your personal statement to hand, because if you do talk to an academic like Alex, and he'll want to ask you questions about
existential psychoanalysis, all of the kind of classics that come through, square root of pi.
It's helpful if you've got your statement to hand. If Alex is going to ask you quite challenging questions,
your pub
like
quiz,
that.
Your virtual pub quiz.
Exactly. How many times have you listened to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition? All of these kind of classic areas from that point of view. Ben, any thoughts or questions you'd like to put to Lisa Maria?
Yeah. What's the biggest thing you've missed about being in Lincoln?
She's left,
if anything,
3 weeks now, I think. Yeah. She since her father.
Have you missed anything at all? And if so, what?
Yeah, well, I was quite used to living there. You know, I have my own room, I have my friends there, I have my kind of daily routine and just walk around, go to university. So that is quite weird to be at home and not really have that routine. So basically, well, I could do whatever I want to, but it's just, I don't know, it's different.
Do you not miss the Hazlitt?
Yeah. It's really weird, though. Yeah. I do miss strange things, but not that much yet, but it's only been a week, so...
It's only been a week.
2 or 3 weeks it will be. We've
kind of formally signed you up as an Innsbruck commentator, so it's clear along
yeah.
that.
But Hazlitt addiction obviously takes a bit longer to kick in.
Obviously. Yeah, that's so true. And I'm sure before too long she'd even like our Facebook page as well for that. There's Lisa Maria in full
yeah.
force on her first show with Ben and indeed Shaylee McKenzie, who couldn't be with us today because she's got work commitments. But there we are, life continues.
Hiya.
Ben, last two questions for Lisa Maria Schwarzenegger before we go on to a mystery voice for yourself.
Lisa, have you enjoyed your 10 o'clock lip today on the show?
Very much so.
And will you join us again sometime soon, perhaps?
Yeah, I'd love to. Definitely.
Prime ministers and presidents may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions remains. Someone else
Still so much to pack in, including, of course, some more exciting events that are taking part at the University of Lincoln, courtesy of Ellie Sample and the fabulous events team and all the wonderful folk that are actually there. Julie Corner, I mean, your staff in many ways, Ellie, work so wonderfully well. Open days and other things, really.
They are the best team in the whole world. I mean, we get around about 100,000 people on campus and at our events every year. And in addition, we speak to around about 60,000 school children every year. The team are amazing.
Exactly. You've got Natasha, Maria, Natalie, the whole range of folk there. Actually, splendid stuff. We've also got news about how you should actually be having 8 glasses of water minimum a day to actually keep yourself fully hydrated. And actually, fizzy drinks are not a substitute for that. So that's still to come. But now it is time, Ben, for the mystery voice to actually join us as far as things are concerned. You've had various lines from that perspective. I can actually reveal it's not Eddie Redmayne, okay? It's not Eddie Redmayne, I'm just sort of saying that. Mystery voice, would you like to say a few words, please?
Ben. Hello, Ben, how are you? You're thinking, oh, my God, this is the most awful thing, because you're never going to recognise his voice, and now you're going through everything in your mind possible, from steamy nights in the engine shed to sessions in the lecture room, and you just don't know, do you?
I know who this is.
Because John's completely blank. He thought he might be the new Doctor Who. No. he was also sort of talking about that. Yeah.
Morning, Kat.
Yes, it is.
Morning, Ben. You got it right.
Norwich's public relations guru and indeed producer and agent for Nick Elliott and general all-round fine soul, Kat. Welcome.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. Well, it's great to be on the show, and I've been listening in this morning, and what some fabulous conversation, as always. It's been really great to listen to this end.
Oh, very nice. So what in Norwich, then, Kat, has most kind of floated your boat? This is our little on-air audience research package, because as Ali will say, at the University of Lincoln, we're always looking to improve. We're always looking to work through that. What have been the highlights? Was it the cricketing prowess of Durham, or lack of? Was it the intense nature of Richard Fitzwilliam's passionate defence of Howard's End? Well, somebody has to. Although I can't ever see Nick Elliott featuring the theme to Howard's End on one of his Sound and Nick's Vision shows. What sort of areas kind of floated your boat, Kat?
Well, I'll tell you what, I really enjoyed the conversation around the Diana tapes and obviously all the controversy around that and how the celebration of 20 years and really how that leads into, you know, how journalism is now portrayed in terms of, you know, the general broadcast journalism particularly. And how we're actually influenced by programmes such as the two that we've seen recently by Diana. So I think that's been really interesting this morning. And the other thing that I really loved was the reference to Hazlitt just a few moments ago by Ellie there, talking about something that is a delicacy, of course, for Lincolnshire, which is wonderful.
Thank you, Kat. I felt that was a highlight as well. Yeah, thank you.
It certainly was. I enjoyed that.
And indeed, Ellie and Kat, you share the fact that you're both CIPR folks, Certified Institute of Public Relations people. So it all connects together. Wonders it. In fact, Kat was up for an award this year, you know.
Oh, wow.
What were you up for?
I was up for the Excellence Awards, which is the national one, and it was for independent practitioner.
Well done.
I got all the way through to the finals. It was really exciting stuff, but I was just pipped at the post, you know, how these things go. But it was a good experience,
Well done you. I can't help, I have to say, I did win one of those, but not for some time, I'm afraid.
It's good competition. I've judged a few of these as well, the regional ones, the Pride Awards, as well as the Excellence Awards. And I know that they're robust in terms of their, you know, the actual process. So it's always nice to get through to something that really has some value.
Kat, you'll always be a winner as far as the Midweek Drive is concerned.
You're well aware about that.
In fact, already, as Ben will attest
I'll endorse that.
Kat said more on here than she does in any single Sound and Nick's Vision show. It's fantastic, really.
Exactly. too busy on the iPad.
She's too busy with her selfie stick. That's
exactly.
Really
exactly.
Not just for me, I hate to do that. This is for everybody else in my PR role here.
Exactly so. So we're congratulating Ben, and Kat, one of the reasons I wanted to get you on this particular production, because it's going to be the last time that you will actually have, likely to have, face-to-face contact, or even telephonic contact, conceivably, with Ben. I'm sorry, but Nick doesn't like phone-ins, you know. I offered him the chance of actually doing his show with it via a phone system when our studio was out base. He said, no, it's not the same.
I don't mind the phone. I'm quite happy to. And to speak to Ben, I'm more than happy to ring
Thank
him.
Thank you, Kat.
I'm just so excited for you. Tell me all about this, Ben. So you're going to Bentley for a year, is this right?
Yes. It's a nine-month role, but it's for the year out. So it'll be until May next year. Begins in 2 weeks' time. And then sort of go from there, really. But it's all hands on deck, pretty much.
This is your dream job, isn't it? Because I do recall in our sessions occasionally, when we've been talking about brands and we've given exercises out to actually do the branding of a particular well-known company, Bentley has always been on your list, hasn't it?
Yeah, so, it was the one I ended up picking for that task, actually, ironically. But I'm really looking forward to it. I'm sort of for the challenges ahead as well. I'm really keen to sort of get involved and sort of go from there, really. I think it will bode well on my CV and hopefully allow me to make more connections while I'm there.
Oh, absolutely. And what a wonderful brand, isn't it? And exactly what are you going to be doing there? Is it a comms role?
Yeah, communications intern. So it will mainly sort of be press inquiries, but also handling press releases and sort of going from there, really, helping out press events. And
wonderful.
Just all, anything really that can sort of dish out to me.
And
absolutely
doing
brilliant.
All sorts of wonderful things. Of course, Kat, you are one of our wonderful lecturers as well, who's fed in your expertise to the public relations course at the University of Lincoln. Just showing a photograph of your good self to the team there. That's Ben, Sue, Nick, and Kat. It's the one that was actually taken way back in May, actually. So that's May of this year, and Kat just setting up for Sound and Nick's Vision, which has not really taken a hiatus, because it will be back with us before you know where you are at end of August, I believe.
Of course, the famous selfie stick is in the photo too.
Will be, and you're going to miss that episode as well, Ben, aren't you?
Oh no! Well, I'll have to listen in.
Exactly, he can become an audience listener from that perspective.
And you can always do a telephone link, maybe at some point as well.
Indeed. Sounds
Ellie,
good.
Any questions you'd like to put to Kat about life, the universe, PR in Norwich, what it's like to actually cope with an internationally acclaimed rock star photographer who once actually set the task of wanting his images put on the back of articulated lorries?
Well, I think we all face clients like that, don't we, Kat? I think for me, what the listeners would probably like to hear is who's been your most, either your most famous or your most challenging client.
Oh, you know, that's a hard one, because I think most of the challenges come with sometimes the biggest brands. I hate to tell you this, Ben, but sometimes the ones that you think are actually going to be the really easy things would be the ones that actually give you the hardest work. So I'll never give you an example. I've done various different campaigns. Let me take one, for example, with E.ON, where I was the brand strategy manager doing the whole new rebranding when they went from PowerGen to E.ON. And that was an incredibly difficult thing, simply because it was such an enormous task when you have an internal brand, an external brand, and of course it impacts on every single part of the business. So when you've got a great, you know, historic and valuable asset that you're protecting, it's very difficult to actually go and make sure that you enhance that through some of the decisions that you make. So actually the hardest ones are sometimes the ones that you expect to be the most either the most enjoyable or actually the easiest ones to do, and sometimes they're not.
No, I think I agree with you there. Obviously from previous work experience I've done, I've worked with some huge brands, and I can say that whilst it's great, you almost automatically know what they like and what they don't like and who they target, etc. At the same time, you've got to also take into account they want their money's worth, and they're very demanding, and they want what they set out for initially. And if you can't Absolutely. Provide them results, they'll go elsewhere to get those results.
Exactly. I mean, in today's age, of course, when it's a lot of it is online marketing as well as online PR, etc., you've got quite a lot of digital analytics to take into account. So it really is real time, and these brands expect instant delivery, which, of course, on certain communications techniques like PR will take a long time to see a result and isn't always evidenced in a digital environment. So it's about educating clients as well, and educating brands that, you know, sometimes it's about this integrated approach and layering of activities that give you results. And it isn't just about doing one thing to make everything right.
And Kat, are there any sort of three top tips you would give to Ben to help him in his new role in PR at Bentley?
Yeah, I suppose my top three would probably be for Ben to go in with just a completely open mind, which I know he will be, because I know Ben well, so I know he's going to go in with an open mind and take anything that they give you, because it's experience, it's great for your CV, and it's going to teach you something even if you don't think you're going to learn it. So certainly that. And then secondly, I would say, you know, just be flexible. Just in terms of being, you know, just making sure that you take everything as a challenge. Don't put too much pressure on yourself either. You know, just don't think that you're going to go in there and have to deliver straight away. So be kind to yourself as well. And then thirdly, enjoy it. You know, it's a wonderful journey. You're at the start of that journey in terms of, like, you know, employment. So go out and grasp it. It's a great world out there, and you've got a great career ahead of you, and you'll do brilliantly well.
Oh, thank you very much, Kat. I will take those into account, and I will. I may as well write them down and take them with me on my first day.
You can play the podcast lovely. Back as well.
I'll do that on my lunch break.
And the Gettysburg Address.
Exactly. Recite it to myself, yeah, those three points.
Kat, I know that you're keen to find out from Ellie what exciting things are coming up at the University of Lincoln that make it worthwhile to actually take that journey from Norwich through to Lincoln, even when sometimes finding a car parking space is a whole new world.
Don't say that, Alex. Just get on the train and come to Lincoln, Kat. We've genuinely got some really exciting things coming up for the new season. So we've got
so many new buildings, Kat. You won't recognise the place when you're back
I won't
here.
I recognise it, right? Oh, crikey!
We're spending $330 million on the campus. It's absolutely overwhelming, the change.
Although in comparison, incredible. that's simply $170 million less than Neymar was bought for Paris Saint-Germain, so everything's relative. We could have had a third of a footballer.
That would have been not so useful,
exactly.
Considering we're a university.
Exactly.
I don't think any of the students would have thanked us
Damien
for that.
Damien Hirst wouldn't have done a sort of slice it in half and give you, it's a third of a footballer, that's where we've spent $30 million on. It's not going to work.
That's $330 million. Yeah. But, we've got some really great things going on. I mentioned Professor Kakelios, who's doing the Science of Superheroes. But after that, we've got Chris Packham, and he'll be doing Bats and Owls at Halloween again, which is absolutely amazing. And we've even got a Palm Nut Vulture coming this year, who does some interesting tricks, I understand. So Bats and Owls live in the LPAC, I believe. We've got Tom Heap coming from Countryfile. He's another visiting lecturer at the University of Lincoln. And also Judy Friedberg, who was the education editor of The Guardian. She's coming as well to do a great lives talk. And finally, my favourite one that we've got coming, as well as Angela Rippon, we've also got Stuart Lee coming.
17th of October, Stuart Lee.
I'm really looking forward to Stuart Lee. I think
I'd love to have gone and seen Stuart Lee, but in fact, I'm disappointed at that. Always when
exactly.
I'm not there.
You can come back. I think Stuart Lee is going to be amazing. He's a journalist, he's a writer, he
created stand-up comedy as well.
Just the funniest man ever in the whole world, and also does Jerry Springer and the Opera, so knows about controversy, knows about dealing with very difficult...
He co-wrote Jerry Springer the Opera.
Yes, oh. he's a man at the centre of every controversy, really.
Exactly. And indeed, British Comedy Award for Best Comedy Entertainment Programme, Best Male Television Comic, and 2012 won a BAFTA Television Award for Best Comedy Programme. So it's a win-win situation. Mm. He'll be devastated that Ben isn't actually on campus when he comes, but I'm sure Ellie will manage to...
Sort of, to try and arrange an interview, Alex.
Exactly.
That would be great.
We should work through that.
We do need some interviews.
It's always a case of interchange, and
you've been summoned now, Alex.
Work our way through that, and let's not forget that Sound and Next Vision will have Volume 31 emerging as well, as far as audio people are concerned, with Kat and Nick Elliott in the near future. Kat, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Alex, as usual.
Marvel. Well, you say as usual because the last time we booked you for a morning show, I temporarily lost your telephone number, so you're waiting there in Norwich, and we just completely... So, yeah, I'll admit, mea culpa.
You stood me up.
Exactly.
You stood me up, Alex. I've never got over it, actually.
I know. We had to have several years of therapy, but we managed to sort the thing through. That's the important thing. You did return. And you will return again, one presumes.
I certainly will. If I'm invited on and you remember my number, I will be here rebelled on.
You know my name. You remember my number. Do you realize that? Well, from the quality control, we have to say that Flaming Lips and Do You Realise seems to have gone a little bit peculiar from that perspective, but still, never mind. Life continues. Ellie, we mentioned quite a lot today, including the excitement. The easiest way to find out these details is presumably to go to lincoln.ac.uk.
Come to the website, exactly.
Excellent. And, of course, John, from the events guide, people can actually send in events to you, and then we'll lock them into an office, and then we'll change the lock so you won't be able to access those details. No, only kidding. It'll have worked. Will emerge because they actually appear on every Tuesday when you actually produce the events guide.
I bring it out every Tuesday. If you have an event in your area and you'd like it to be put on air, preferably give me 10 to 14 days notice and email me at john.wenham@sarenonline.co.uk.
Simples.
Off your cloud, watch us be facing the crowd. You can remember that once upon a love affair, your heart was warm, your lips were tender, and I didn't care, baby.
You're gonna see,
you're gonna see
a brand new me,
a brand new me.
It's on my mind this time.
I really love you. My fill of fooling around. Ain't no life, just being a clown. I heard the weather report and he
and said, "Sonny, today, how did he know that you would show up to love me today, baby?
Given traditional British summertime weather, to start talking about when the UK workforce will grind to a halt, and also the ultimate temperature, of course, being 24 degrees Celsius from that perspective. But new research looking into productivity and hydration has indeed found that the aforementioned 24 degrees Celsius is the official temperature at which British folk become unproductive and unable to concentrate. On average, we drink 2 glasses of water today. Perhaps it's not enough, and recent research conducted by Vita Coco found that almost 40% of the population falsely believe that all liquids are equally hydrating. Now, to address these issues and provide some insight into the importance of coconut water and staying hydrated, we're delighted to welcome that ace soul, the tremendously talented Dr. Sarah Brewer. How are you, Sarah?
Hello. That's a good introduction.
Always critical, Sarah, to actually get the items right. Now, this particular survey, again, I know a number of folk who, you know, for some reason, they say, oh, I don't drink water, I don't work through that part of you. And yet, you know, think of your kidneys, as I say. Think of your kidneys. We are, you know, we're what, 80, 90% water in terms of all of our connections. If we're not drinking water and actually refreshing ourselves with respect to H2O and indeed balances of that, we're really not doing ourselves any justice whatsoever.
No, well, the body is 60% water and all our cells are bathed in water and they contain water inside them. Mm. And that water is very important for carrying electrolytes and enzymes and proteins and nutrients, everything around the body, really. It keeps the brain working, it keeps your kidneys working. And you know yourself, as soon as you start to feel dehydrated, well, you might not even know you're dehydrated, because by the time you feel thirsty, you are significantly lacking in fluid. But the brain stops working properly, so you can't think straight. You get brain fog and you get stress headaches, and often that is due to feeling thirsty.
And folk can obviously turn around and say, oh yes, but it's not as though we're in the Sahara Desert. We're not actually sort of seeing mirages. We're not having to have a hanky over our heads and so on. It doesn't necessarily need to be in a desert location. You can be dehydrated as the temperature's going up. That's part of the homeostatic mechanism by which our bodies function, really.
Absolutely. And the research on behalf of Vita Coco found that 24 degrees is the temperature at which we start to recognise that we're not functioning at our best. And the body has to produce a certain amount of waste liquid, I'm trying to put it delicately, every day in order to get rid of the toxins, the ammonia and etc. that the liver and kidneys are making. So in order to get rid of that, we do have to lose water when we breathe. Every breath you take, you know, mist up a mirror, you're losing water. Mm. And I think we forget that. So even when it's not hot, we still need to maintain good hydration.
That's the natural respiratory cycle. And not just that, but obviously we can go into the whole notion of excretion is a classic characteristic of life and life forms. And we're not camels. We can't work on the basis of being camels, and camels, the storage system is completely different. I know we share mammalian characteristics, but we are not camels. However, it does seem as though some of our millennials have bucked the trend. Over half of those, or nearly half of those, are looking to hit the target of 8 glasses a day of water, compared to just a quarter of over 55s.
Yes, it's quite surprising, though, that 18% overall don't drink any water at all day long. And the main reasons for that is they don't like the taste. taste, or they just think it's plain boring. So, you know, finding alternatives is very important, and that's where coconut water comes in.
Now, one of the classic lines I've constantly been banging on about is the notion that please do not substitute water with sugar drinks, because sugar is the new nicotine. It's going to do far worse damage to your systems if you just say, oh, I'm just going to have a can of makes you burp Coca-Cola or various other sort of aspects from that. That's no substitute, really. I mean, it can obviously offset in the short term, but presumably it's no substitute for coconut water, natural water, and flavoured water, and indeed just two glasses of water a day.
Exactly, yes. I mean, and even if you think you could have some nice 100% fruit juice, the guidelines recommend we don't have any more than 150 mils of that a day now because of the sugar in it, which is a shame. Smoothies are good because they actually have the extra fibre in them. So if you're going to choose one or the other, then a smoothie is good. But coconut water is the life fluid, if you like, of a growing coconut. It's got lots of nutrients in it. It's high in potassium. Potassium helps to flush sodium from the body, and most of us are getting too much salt in our diet. So, you know, it's good for other reasons as well.
If the recommendation for most adults would be 8 glasses of water a day, I can automatically hear a listener saying, oh yes, but how big is the glass? Is it a vodka glass? Is it a sort of large-scale tumbler? What are we kind of talking about in terms of litres?
Yeah, it is a shame that the guidelines don't really go into that, but between 250 and 300 mils is a good-sized glass, so a mug size, I would say.
That seemed to be...
How much you can comfortably drink in one go.
Yeah. And again, in terms of that, are you seeing, obviously wearing your hat as a doctor and GP and aspects from that perspective, that actually just simply drinking water, 8 glasses a day, or on average 8 glasses a day, can actually prevent any of the nasty scenarios that can come through? And I mentioned, obviously, kidney aspects and other areas within that. Does it help keep the system flushed out?
It definitely does. But there are other things going on as well. You know, it's not just the ambient temperature. If you're doing a lot of exercise, for example, the world record for sweating, if you like, is 5 litres in an hour from somebody who was doing a marathon run. So, you know, you can lose an awful lot if you're packed into a hot, stuffy carriage on your commute. You know, within half an hour, you can have lost 0.5 litre of fluid. And you come out and you've got a bit of a headache and you're feeling rubbish and you think that's because of the stress of travelling. Well, actually, it could be because you're dehydrated.
And certainly if we're looking at mass transport systems, whether it's the London Underground or indeed other mass transit systems from that perspective, it's not so much a case of road rage, but travel rage. Maybe you should actually just have a small bottle of water always with you as an essential item.
Yes, and if you don't like the taste of water, find it boring, don't, as you said before, reach for a sugary fizzy can. Go for some nice Vita Coca coconut water. It's delicious, it's fresh, it's very hydrating.
Is there a difference between frozen water, i.e. ice, and clearly sort of natural water? Because, I mean, clearly some folk would actually say, oh, I prefer sort of ice-cool water that's refreshing as opposed to something which is warm and so on.
Well, it's interesting. When you go to very hot countries, they're often drinking hot tea. Mm. And, in fact, hot drinks can cool you down because it causes your blood vessels to dilate and it moves blood towards the skin and it promotes sweating. So you're losing heat by radiation from your skin by having a hot drink, and as I said, we're also sweating. But obviously you get the instant hit of the refreshing coldness if you're having a cold drink. But if you have too much, that could constrict down the blood flow, so it could actually go against you a little bit. But, you know, it swings and roundabouts. It's what you prefer. I'd much rather you took something than nothing, and if it's hot or cold, I don't think it really matters for hydration.
In the Vita Coco survey, 72% was the score that tea actually came up with, the most popular drink of choice. One minor question. I tend to be a great believer in cranberry tea, in other words, herbal tea and aspects relating to that, as opposed to the, well, if you can stand your spoon up in the mug, that's real tea. Again, presumably there's a big difference in terms of the health benefits of a cranberry tea, for instance, or a green tea, and something which is the traditional British tea.
Yes, well, obviously teas that have got caffeine in them are slightly dehydrating, because caffeine itself is a diuretic. Yeah. But in fact, there is research which shows that because you're getting so much fluid in that cup of tea, it actually doesn't make an awful lot of difference. So if you like your normal tea, then drink your normal tea. And if you're adding milk to it, you're getting a bit of extra calcium as well, which is good. But if you like herbal teas, then obviously you're getting a really good amount of fluid from that. If you like the flavour, that's good. And some of other herbs actually have medicinal benefits as well, although probably not in the concentration you're getting in a herbal tea bag.
And a slight smile as well to the notion that 36% of folk believe that wine or beer every day would constitute part of their daily allowance. Presumably that's for the gin and tonic, perhaps. You know, they'd have that sort of aspect. And,
yes, if you're going to drink on a hot day and you must have alcohol, then at least make it into a spritzer, you know, have your wine with lots of water, and alternate every other drink with a non-alcoholic drink.
I think it was Churchill who actually said that the British Empire was won on the back of gin and tonic because of its quinine properties and so on. But that's not necessarily an excuse to simply actually sort of, you know, overindulge in the whole thing. It's balance, as we often say.
Absolutely.
If you've got a top quality car, you don't want to pour sugared water into it to actually sort of impact on that basis. Sarah, any place that people can actually go to if they've been listening to this conversation to find out more information about Vita Coco or indeed some of the top tips that you've been providing today?
Absolutely. They can go to the website vitacoco.com/UK, and I have a nutritional medicine website which is drsarahbrewer.com, and I've actually got a post on there on the health benefits of coconut water. It's actually credited with saving thousands of lives, I mean, cholera epidemics, for example. Yeah. And if you're really stuck in the middle of the jungle, then medics actually can use fresh sterile coconut water straight from a baby coconut to infuse to replace blood loss. So it's quite magical stuff.
I'm pleased you mentioned your own website, Sarah, because I think it's essential to go to from that point of view. Sarah, it's been lovely talking to you, good self, this morning. Have you had a reasonably interesting and refreshing telephonic link with us yourself?
I've loved it. Thank you so much.
So I take it we can possibly prevail upon you to join us in the not-too-distant future to keep us appraised of nutritional matters and other factors as well. Will you kindly return sometime?
I would love to. Thank you.
We started off with Felicity Stinton from Dead Right, Hannah Brown, Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Kat, of course, Piazza, Lisa Maria Schwarzenauer from Austria, and Dr. Sarah Brewer there, wrapping up the particular programme. Ellie, have you enjoyed your latest Midweek Drive and Woody Edition?
I always do, Alex. It's a real honour and a pleasure to work with you. You're an absolute star.
Word, thank you. And John, as you were locked out of the office, have we provided some comfort and solace for you the last 2 hours?
You have. You've been excellent entertainment and company.
Well, and Ben, your last year, I tried to make it a little bit special for you.
Yes. No, it was very nice, thank you. Very much enjoyed it. And even the mystery voice I enjoyed too.
There we are. Who did you think it was? Do you think it was going to be Tessa?
Oh, I had a few people in mind.
Yes, but, well, there we are.
I was not disappointed, though, I must say.
I hope not. Ellie, finally, in terms of the... If there was one tip that we'd actually say for people getting their exam results, would it be don't panic, perhaps?
Well, maybe don't panic. Probably the thing I would say, which is quite genuine and important, is if you're on the phone at clearing and someone offers you a course and you don't understand what it is and you don't recognise it because it's not sort of like something you've come across before, then do ask. Don't just enrol on a course because it's the only one that's offered to you. That would be my top tip, as well as don't panic.
And follow your tummy test, etc. Lots of great things.
Follow your
happening.
Heart.
Exactly. Is there the phone number as well, the clearing?
That would be 0808 164 4444, Ben.
That's it.
If you wish to actually contact people, either now or indeed next week, just give us a call, 0808 164 4444.
When I'm saying 7:30 in the morning of clearing, the line's open, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly, that's for the University of Lincoln open line, the home of Lincoln's first community radio station, Siren FM. Coming up today, we've got another edition of the Stone Tapes at 7 o'clock, a whole heap of other goodies coming through as well. And just a little heads up, next week we're joined by Grammy Award-winning conductor and composer Victor Vanacore, who has currently just released a collection of 10 neoclassical arias composed to the poetry of Pope John Paul II. He's worked with such fine folk as Ray Charles as well. So Victor's actually joining us from that point of view, a whole heap of other things as well. Ellie, you will be back in the not-too-distant future, no doubt.
Fantastic.
And John?
Yes, certainly.
And Ben, as you go on the phone lines, we'll see you again in a year, presumably.
Indeed.
We should do a location reporting crew. We'll get that together.
That'd be fabulous.
Happy trails.